So, Griffin, you are about to experience everything id Software has to offer at the annual QuakeCon.
I mean, I don't anticipate that I'll be experiencing much things directly through id Software.
What does that
mean? By which I mean that there's not going to be any fucking Doom talk at all at this thing, as there never is.
How long has that game been in development at this point?
It's been a billion years. I mean, I'll give it the old college, but I feel like asking people from id Software at QuakeCon about Doom, it has almost turned into like a fraternity like pledge dare. It's the futility of it is like.
Do you think it's a Texas thing that maybe you aren't allowed to release games until they've been in development for like 10 years?
Well, the state is so big.
Yeah, and the heat know, it's, too. Like the heat just—they're like lizards on a rock. They
you finish move. The build, which is like hard to do anyway, because like trying to motivate a team of 100 developers when it's 100 and butt sweat hot outside.
Yeah, and I guess most people don't know that if you are a developer in Texas, those 100 people have to have at least 10 miles apart from one another. Like, right. they're scattered across. Right.
There's very little collaboration just because of the geography.
Yep. Yeah, and it's all delivered by rickshaw.
Rickshaw traveling over hot, hot wastelands.
Yeah.
Football fields.
They had a build of Duke Nukem forever ready, like in 2004, and then you know what happened? Vultures.
Whoops.
I'm Griffin McElroy, and I know the best game of the week thing.
Hey, I'm Chris Plant. I know the best game of the week.
I'm Dave Tack, and I also know the best game of the week.
A jaunty good day to you, sirs. I am Ross Frostick, and I happen to know the best game of the week.
We're the besties, and together we get together on a weekly basis on Fridays. And we get together on Fridays, and we talk about games, we talk about sports, we talk about interior decoration. We talk about new experimental kinds of Twizzlers. There's really a new one every week.
Have you tried that one with the juice in it? It's like a gusher, but it's a Twizzler.
No, but you've just described a very real, very powerful dream of mine.
Yeah.
Justin, my brother, and my boss is out. He's on vacation in Savannah, Georgia. So substituting for him is professional Griffin McElroy substitute Dave Tack.
Hi.
This must be so weird for you, Plant and Fresh Dick, because it's like you're caught in like in between the cracks of some sort of multiverse.
We've never done this array before, and it really is blowing my mind apart.
You can just do what I do and pretend that Griffin is Justin.
That is. Don't ever say that again. We are going to talk about some games this week. We've all been playing some games. There have also been newses, but I don't think we want to talk about those, right? We're pretty much going to stick with games.
Yeah, I don't know. Who knows?
We'll see where the spirit moves us again. Why don't you start us off, Dave Tatch?
Oh, boy, how exciting. My thing of the week is the best new old game, I think. I'm calling it, and that is Rise of the Triad, which I have been playing for and failing at miserably for days and days and days. Do you guys know Rise of the Triad?
I actually, apart from the name, have no prior experience with the series or the game at all. So
I imagine
a world in which someone doesn't know anything about this game and you're living in it.
I had an embarrassing... Well, they announced it last year at QuakeCon. That was my first QuakeCon that I covered, and I got like a hands-on demo and interview with the like new creators, and like there's so much nostalgia built into the game in that its weapon set is fairly zany, and its violence is, you know, pretty over the top, and they were giving me this demo like, here comes the Excalibat. You remember that, right?
As like, you know,
I don't actually, I super don't remember that. I'm sorry.
It was my first-person shooter, and it was my entry point to casual misogyny. Because on the box, it has the woman with blood all over her, and she's wearing a very revealing V-neck that they've since neutered in the remake art. She had, like, cleavage, and now they've replaced it with, like, a very weird tattoo.
Interesting. As a follow-up question, is there anything, like, formal misogyny? Is that a thing?
No, I think it's like, you know, it's just like a box art. No big deal. It's not like, you know, like a trashy, like, rag. Is that what they call Playboy magazines?
They call them trashy rags. Yeah.
Trashy rags.
Trags.
I don't think anybody calls them that.
But yeah, it was my first FPS. And what's funny is I've been playing this, and I'll let Dave talk about it, but it's nothing like what I remembered it being in my head.
It's the box art makes about as much sense as the game, which is actually works out pretty nicely. It really is a remake of a Doom era first person shooter in Unreal Engine 3. Chris, you've played it, right?
Yeah, and I actually just got off the phone with Scott Miller, who was like the guy who funded the original and, you know, made, I guess, we'll probably make some money off this one. In my head, Rise of the Triad was just Wolfenstein, which is, like, slow and flat. And that's not it at all.
No.
The original Rise of the Triad was one of the first Y-axis, or what is it, XYZ? Yeah, Y.
Oh, so you can look up.
You can look up and down, and there's bouncing pads. So you actually, there's platforming. Which is about as much of a nightmare as you probably imagine it would be back in the day. And the new one is pretty much the exact same thing, but with shinier graphics. Like, they really did just make a super fast, really bizarre, kill everything as fast as you can shooter.
So you think that's what it is. It's in the spirit of, like, a Serious Sam.
Serious Sam was inspired a lot by Rise of the Triad.
Sure.
And yeah, so I mean, now it's like kind of fulfilling that circle.
Yeah,
And it reminds me of things that I've essentially forgotten for 15 years.
Well, that's like because nobody makes shooters like this anymore. Like nobody makes these. You guys remember that sort of shitty toned video about how if they remade Quake in modern days, this is what it would be like, and it was just like one long corridor with a giant reticle on the screen, and there were tips that popped up every 4 seconds. Like, that was, you know, pretty exaggerated, but like not so far off. And this kind of represents just a style of maze shooters that I just think fell out of fashion a decade or so ago.
Well, yeah, I think everyone appreciates that. I don't think as gameplay they're not super fun. They were fun at the time because we didn't really know any better, but they do not age well at all.
No. I remember picking up, I think, Doom 2 for Xbox Live Arcade with the rewind feature. Or was it? I think it was actually Duke Nukem. That just, like, man. Ugh.
Yeah.
God.
It captures that feeling perfectly, both good and bad. And I think as shooters have gotten more intelligent, this takes a deliberate step back, and I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that, but it really is, like Chris said, an excuse to run. I mean, your walk in this is is like a Usain Bolt sprint.
And what's the sprint like then?
There, that is your sprint your walk
is no
and your everything.
You just sprint.
That's it, period. And they throw enemies at you that appear at first to be about as smart as a sack of rocks, but if you stay still for any amount of time, they will absolutely destroy you. And it was like a great unlearning for me for the first few days of playing this game when I did miserably. I was terrible at it, and I'm only slightly less than terrible at it at this point.
Were you just like hiding behind chest high walls and waiting for your health to refill? I'm like, that won't
right. Work. Right. Mm-hmm. I was looking for the zombies that didn't come, and I was trying to play it stealthy, and that doesn't work. No, it's. I mean, it really is. You have to remember that the point of the game is to go insane, and shoot like the gun that has a wave of fire that just obliterates everybody, and look for all the secrets which are hidden everywhere so that you can get these crazy power-up weapons that don't make any sense, but they don't have to make any sense because they're there just to be completely insane. And they have built cheat codes right into it. So I,
oh, that's fun.
Like turning on God mode is, in under normal circumstances in a normal game, I wouldn't do that. And I am playing this so that I don't have to do that, but man, I'm going to have a lot of fun turning on God mode at some point just to motor through. It's the opposite. And again, this is not a knock. It's the opposite of a thinking man's shooter. It's just there to be crazy. And it accomplishes that. And
you sound pretty excited about it. It sounds like you're into it.
Yeah, it's fun. It was an absolute drag for the first. Like, I got stuck on world, like straight up, got stuck on world 1-3 for hours. I mean, I just kept
couldn't find the key. There was a switch.
there are switches. There are colored keys. Ooh. There are everything. And I just, yes, it is everything. On its face, designed to be everything like that kind of game that I haven't touched since about the time that Rise of the Triad first came out. Like back when I was playing Star Wars Dark Forces or whatever that was called. And I didn't think I missed it, and I didn't think I wanted it. And it was a lot harder to get back into. But actually, the thing that taught me really how to play was getting in the multiplayer, which is a big component of the game. Where they just throw you several insane weapons and a couple of other guys in a room, play some music in the background, and just everybody goes nuts. And it may be a one trick pony, but it's a pretty good trick.
Yeah,
that's what was great about the original Rise too, and I think is what's good about this type of shooter and what still disappoints me with Halo and Call of Duty, even though I love both, especially the latter, is they just aren't fast and crazy.
No.
They've gotten so competitive that they've lost a certain part of the wacky, okay, let's have some beers and just blow each other up for a few hours. And I feel like this game nails it.
Halo's like a, its big encounters are like a gameplay puzzle, right? You go in, you got to figure out who to take out, how to take out, when to take them out.
There's not
literally
a goddamn red key to open the red door.
That's the difference between the single player and the multiplayer.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. This is just shoot people. And it turns out, though I haven't really played anything like that in a long time, just shooting dudes is fun.
Yeah. The Serious Sam games, I said earlier there weren't many games like that, people making games like that, but I think the Serious Sam games are kind of in the same vein.
Yeah, but those have also sort of worn their welcome and gotten progressively worse over the years to the point where I can't even stand them.
Let's talk about another game.
I've got a good segue, if you guys don't mind, and I'm going to pull an audible because I was originally going to bring one thing, but then I realized we had not discussed one of the biggest game releases of the last few weeks, and I was going to do it right here.
Is this a goof?
No, this is not a goof. This is legit. My game is the actually best old new game to come out this or to that I played this week,
mm-hmm.
and that game is Shadowrun Returns.
Oh yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
Sell me on this fucking game because I never played the original, and it seems like something I could probably sink my teeth into.
I can sell you on it very quickly. Imagine blending XCOM with Fallout 1, and that's Shadowrun Returns.
That sounds all right.
It's groovy. So here's the deal. I never played the original either. I know a lot of people are fond about it. Dig the SNES version. I think there was a Genesis version as well. I never played them, but, you know, I dug those games from that era, which were like the Fallout 1s of the world and like those RPGs that were half about reading and like talking to people as much as they were the combat. Shadowrun Returns is definitely in that spirit of game. It sort of comes with its own, obviously, campaign as like a starter campaign, which is actually quite long. But the story is essentially like film noir, you know, your buddy dies and he leaves like a dead man's switch and his head flips off and he sends you a message that's like, if you find my killer, I'll pay you $100,000. So that kicks off this
that's
very...
That's not a lot of dollars.
No.
Well, in the world of Shadowrun, that could be a
lot. I'm just saying, you win more dollars.
Maybe they're creds.
On The Biggest Loser.
Cred sticks.
In Biggest Loser, if you win The Biggest Loser, you win 250,000 cred sticks.
Oh, shit. Well, I mean, that's tough, though, because you got to lose all that weight.
You got to lose.
It's probably easier to just find someone's killer.
Whodunit. In Whodunit, you can win, I think it's also a quarter of a mil.
Yeah, but then you get mauled by a tiger, so...
As a mountain lion. God, yeah. That show's fucking bananas. Go on.
So there's a couple things I want to talk about for Shadowrun Returns, but the big one, the one that I think I find most appealing, is the combat, which is, like, legit very XCOM-esque. But the difference between the combat in this and versus XCOM is that it feels like you have a lot more control over how you develop your character, whereas in XCOM, there was, like, four classes, and each of the classes had a very, like, strict... narrow field for how you can upgrade them, whereas here there's like tons of skill trees and powers to unlock and like tons of weapons and stuff like that, but it's all turn-based and like really thoughtful, and you're dealing with like percentage to hit chance and stuff like that, very retro old school stuff. And backing all that up is like a really well written story and an art style that looks obviously inspired by that like isometric era of RPG, but modernized to the point where it looks amazing even on like my crappy MacBook Air. It runs great on a MacBook Air, I should mention.
Oh, really?
Runs great.
That's the only endorsement I really need.
Yeah. And it's just a really cool art style that's very true to the series while updating it for like an HD system. So that's all the good stuff. There is a lot of good stuff to talk about this game. I really dig it. It's a cool like tool that I'm sure people will use to build mods and their own stories, et cetera, et cetera. That's all great. There is obviously one very large issue with this game that you may or may not have heard about, and that is the saving. You cannot save anywhere in Shadowrun Returns at all. The only way to save the game is through autosaves that happen when the game decides the game should autosave. This is becoming the norm. BioShock Infinite did not have discrete saving. It was all checkpoints. But the difference is the checkpoints in BioShock Infinite were not 20 to 30 minutes apart, whereas they definitely are in Shadowrun Returns. Mm-hmm. It's a pretty big bummer, not because I don't mind I think it's kind of good to have tension, and like if you die, you're punished enough that you have to go back. But I'd rather have the option, and I also I don't want to be in the mindset where it's like, oh, I can only play this game if I have 30 free minutes to dedicate.
Well, not only that, but like having to make that decision every 30 minutes, because you know every time you hit a checkpoint, it's like, well, do I want to commit another 30 minutes to this thing?
Right, and I definitely find that I'm going through the game much slower because it's like, oh, I need to stop now because I don't know whether I'm going to be able to make it to the next checkpoint. I've looked online, the developers have said there were technical reasons for it, and that they don't like checkpoints better than actual saving, and in the long run, it was just like a triage decision. It seems like a pretty major miss on their part that I don't think you can really excuse.
Has anyone ever leveraged the complaint against a game, the saves were too frequent? No. Like, seriously, that's never... You can't use something as basic as determining where you want to like leave off and continue playing a game as something to determine tension.
Yeah.
Like that's fucking poppycock. That's crazy town. Especially if that's what you want to do, if you want to determine tension by not allowing the player to save wherever they want, do like Dark Souls did, or that's the only game that's coming to mind, but I'm sure there are hundreds of games that do that, where like it's constantly auto-saving.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But to an extent where like if you die, it doesn't take you back to that save.
Yeah. Well, I should mention it wasn't a design decision. It wasn't like, oh, we're doing this because we want to increase tension. It was literally, we can't get this running in time to ship the game. So we're just going to do a checkpoint.
Then just wait a bit.
I know. I'm completely with you. It really stinks. That being said, it's telling that despite something as large as not being able to save wherever you want, I still really, really enjoy the game and definitely endorse it. It's got the Russ Frustic seal of approval, which I know you could trade in at like Best Buy for a free copy of the game.
Have they said anything about a patch? Like, if I wait a month,
They haven't said anything specifically. I mean, if they do release a patch, it's a big deal to like not have saves and then implement them later. That's not a small patch. So I think it'll be if it happens, months away.
Wow.
So.
I'll still check it out. But
a little bittersweet, but yeah, I would definitely recommend checking it out, especially if you like RPGs from that era.
That is so high on my list of complaints.
Yeah.
Is like, I will stop playing a game I'm really, really, really enjoying if it dictates the pacing of my play that thoroughly.
Like, it's a computer. You just, like, pause all the files.
Yeah.
That doesn't seem that hard, but I don't make games, so I don't know.
PlayStation 4 can do it.
Pause all the files.
It's a file pause option.
Yeah, just just pause all the files.
It's a file menu to pause.
Copy it to a flash drive. Just,
right. Make a macro. And you're done.
Take Shadowrun.save and just like, freeze it right there.
Yeah, yep. Just your entire computer at that point in time.
All the zeros and ones, fucking copy and paste them into a Word doc.
Sounds so easy when you
It is easy. It's baby school.
I just did it.
Let's talk about halftime.
Okay.
Halftime.
Yeah.
We could talk about...
Guys, we have to talk about it.
Oh, no. Uh-oh. I don't know if Dave Tack can participate.
In
the greatest 15 minutes of reality television ever filmed.
No, go ahead. I'll sit back. I'll drink
my
coffee.
We can't talk about the evisceration of Des's heart.
she left on the floor bleeding.
It was really bad. Why don't we play a game?
Mm-hmm. Can we save?
You can't. You can't save. I was just going to go through my Google News alerts and read some of the headlines that people wrote about Nintendo only selling 160,000 Wiis
over the
course of 3 months.
Lovely.
It's not good.
Because some people got pretty ribald with their headline choices.
I mean, I don't know. I can't imagine. This is what I can't imagine. Like, I get that the Wii U is doing very poorly. What I can't imagine is that they think that from now until March, it's going to sell, no joke, 10 million units. Because they are sticking to their estimation that they will...
It's at a little over 3.5 right now.
Right. And I think their estimation was that they'd sell 14 million units by March of 2014.
Are you sure about that? Because that's bonkers.
Let me double check. Estimate. Yeah,
The good news is that the 3DS is doing super well for them. Which is like the fact that I'm saying that sentence out loud is kind of crazy, because I feel like definitely not to the extent that we're saying this about the Wii U, but there was definitely some doom and gloom about the 3DS following its launch, because they did something fairly similar to what PlayStation is only now starting to recover from on the Vita, which is where they had a fairly big launch lineup and then just fucking forgot about the thing.
Let me adjust my statistics because I got it wrong a little bit. So their forecast is that they will sell 9 million Wii U consoles by March of 2014. So they've sold 3.5.
So you're only off by 5 million.
Whatever. But I will say, so essentially they're, for the lifetime of the console, they've sold 3.6. And then they're going to have to sell another 5.5 to hit this number. And there's no games coming out.
3.6 were like all.
Don't say there's okay. Hold up. You can't say there's no games coming out.
Okay, for this year, I can think of two big holiday games coming out. Well, Pikmin's obviously out, but Bayonetta and what's the other big holiday game?
Super Mario.
I don't think that's this year.
Nothing says console pusher like Bayonetta 2.
Yeah, Super Mario's in December.
Oh, okay, so Super Mario. When so you have those are two
Smash
games.
Smash Brothers.
Smash Brothers isn't this year.
Smash Brothers next year, and it's not going to happen before March, probably. There just isn't the software to move.
There's not.
Systems.
There's got to be. like a significant price cut. There needs to be a sensible marketing push that's not just like, listen to us guys, or sound like a,
we're a serious
business podcast for stocks. I don't know what it's going to take for them to turn this boat around.
Well, but we should note, like, we're already seeing it on the 3DS. Like, the 3DS boat is being turned around.
It's being turned around by, like, a super aggressive first-party release schedule.
Right.
I don't think there's much third-party support for the 3DS.
No, absolutely not.
Am I wrong about that? But, like, that's sort of... When I think of what it's going to take to get the Wii U going, it's fucking games.
Yeah, like, but it's only going to be first-party games. You're not going to... I mean, this is, again, it's a return to form for Nintendo from the era of, like, GameCube, which is...
Yeah.
They're just sustaining themselves with first-party. And it's, like, they're... You know, 3DS is picking up with first-party releases, and there's a lot of really good first-party games coming out, and I'm sure this will happen.
That strategy is working out better than... The strategy of PlayStation Vita, which is somewhat similar in that there's a lot of mostly first-party releases, but, like, especially the indie stuff, like, they are getting more third-party support, I would say.
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. The Vita is, kept alive, honestly, by indies and third-party support, whereas it's the opposite for 3DS.
It has thrived, despite the fact that nobody's making games.
Right.
I don't know... Like, it's going to have to take the best fucking Mario game, the best fucking Zelda. Oh, Wind Waker HD, that's coming out this year.
Right.
Yeah.
It's going to need to take, like, bundles. It's going to need to take a price cut. Like, they are going to have to use every arrow in their quiver.
I don't see this console coming back.
In 3 months, they sold 10,000 units across all of Europe. The entire—that's fucking bananas.
But they also had no new games, or one new game. As Mike McWhorter pointed out, I think 2 of 3 territories had a single new game come out.
And to be honest, there are a lot of clueless grandparents in Europe. So,
fair enough.
Oh, he'll like this game. It's got the screen on it.
What nationality was that specifically?
That was old lady Europa.
In Vienna.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the price is I think the price is already a problem for the deluxe, which is, I think, the unit most people are interested in. And I think that's going to be an even bigger problem in a couple of months when you can buy a PlayStation 4 for $50 more.
Yeah,
they're going to get poop smacked.
I just think, what other company has the good fortunes of the legacy that Nintendo has, which, when I say that, and this isn't to discount the games that they are releasing, because for the most part, first party is good, are good games, but they have this lineup of first party games that people just devour. Like, yes. Microsoft and Sony will, it seems, never have characters that so many people love so unconditionally and that they will buy a system for. And then on top of it, because Game Boy dominated for so long, if their console market isn't going so hot, they have mobile to fall back on. And if mobile's not going so well, they seem to have console. So it just seems like they have a lot of fail-safes in place for when things like this happen. And that is how they've somehow managed to survive when, I don't know, when Sega couldn't have made it. They made it through the dark days.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of the reason...
They'll probably do it again, it seems like.
Well, yeah, and they're excellent game developers. I mean, most of the stuff they put out is somewhere between good and great. They haven't run into the Team Sonic problem.
Well, Steel Diver, but yeah.
Son of a bitch. Why is that their free-to-play game? That's what makes you so angry. Do free-to-play Pokemon, you dumb idiots. Do free-to-play Pokemon. Like, I will keep your company personally afloat through that single... edifice.
How much would you pay for a Master Ball? Be honest.
I would put down... I mean, I can catch shit without the Master Ball. That's
no,
the,
but like, there's, you know, wow, let's be honest. There's going to be...
shot.
There's going to be a legendary that, like, you're going to want to use that Master Ball.
Did you guys not know, like, in the OG days, it was, at least at my school, like, the most baller thing you could do was... not only catch them all, but catch them all and still have your Master Ball at the end of it. Like, I don't need that shit. Like, I'll go fucking toe-to-toe 200 rounds with Mewtwo.
Griffin, how many people did you talk to at your school?
Just three.
Okay.
But they were all pretty big Pokemaniacs.
Yeah, uh-huh. And they were the coolest kids, right?
We were the coolest kids. Nintendo, please get it together. I've been playing my Wii U a lot lately. I've started to reach the phase where, like, we have people over, and I sort of introduce it to them, and nobody has played one because only 130,000 or however many were sold last quarter. Like, that, I genuinely do enjoy playing it. I
like the console a lot. I think it's got a lot of potential. What it doesn't have is a lot of games. To play.
Yeah. Do you think it's going to have maybe a big indie push? That would be pretty sweet, I think. No, it would. Like, indie developers,
ever
like,
develop an indie game for Nintendo after they took the stage at GDC and literally were like, fuck off and die. You are hurting us. Go away, please.
To their credit, that was 2 or 3 years ago, so.
Yeah, they've changed now that they need help.
I think that there's some opportunity there, like, to get a... I think the Unity license for Wii U is free. I think that, like, if you have clever ideas that I think the indie community has shown itself as having a bigger preponderance for cleverness than the AAA community has, like, I think there's a lot of shit you can do with the Wii U. I think there's a lot of uses that the gamepad has in it that nobody's gotten out of it yet.
I think people are just have learned, like, after releasing indie games on Wii and having them die to the point where, like, they didn't get any money because they didn't hit that threshold that they need to hit. I feel like a lot of indies are just soured on Nintendo in general.
Sure, but load up the Wii shop, 3 years ago and count the number of indie games on there. Don't worry about it, Time Traveler. It's zero. And then load up the Wii U eShop and look at the front page.
Yeah.
Like, they're all over.
Better.
Yep.
The placement is better. They could do a lot better in terms of promotion, but I don't know. I don't know. I want it to turn around so bad. Let's talk about a game. Chris Plant, do you want to go or should I?
Yeah, I'll talk about a game. So, my game's pretty simple this week. It'll go very quickly because it's a fast game. It turns out the sun is setting and you have to race it. Enter Race the Sun, a new game for PC, Mac, and maybe Linux. I'm not sure. I can't be accounted for the truth right now.
Is this game set in Hawaii? Is my first question.
No, it's set in basically... Do you know what white boxing is? Is that, that's a phrase, right? When you white box a game?
Yeah, like testing out. You and your buds get in the car, roll up the windows.
Yeah! And then you just sniff some white out.
I don't know why you'd need to be in a car to do that.
It's pretty much an anywhere thing. Yeah.
Also, don't huff.
Don't do it. But hey, seriously,
no,
guys.
Don't give me no guff. I don't huff. This message is brought to you by
the right stuff.
By Mothers Against Drunk Driving. Go ahead, yeah. Plant.
So you're like basically like a futuristic aircraft / paper airplane, and you are being pushed, propelled forward, and you have to dodge giant pieces of geometry. And that's it. It's pretty much an iOS game, like an Endless Runner, but in 3D, moving forward. And as you accomplish little tasks, you unlock additional abilities, like the ability to jump, or other things that you can collect on the
course. Hold on, wait a minute. You need to slow down a little bit, because you said a lot of things that confuse my brain. First, you said your futuristic space plane that's also a paper airplane.
Well, you look like a paper airplane, but it's obviously supposed to be, like, futuristic.
Okay, that sort of makes sense. Second question, how do you jump when you're in a plane?
That's a good question. You press A.
Well, I don't think so.
It's a little like a double jump.
No, there's no double jump.
Still doesn't make any sense.
Don't get out of control.
But how do you double jump?
Not realistic.
Aeronautic flight. It's basically a double jump. It's just a long sustained double jump.
Do you have any other questions?
Okay, is it like Star Fox?
Well, visually, I mean, yeah, in that you are behind the plane and it's moving forward and you can't slow down or speed up. You just go that speed. Unless you hit like a speed boost, in which case you do speed up.
You're doing such a bad job.
Guys, it's like the most simple game in the world. It's an endless runner, and you have to move forward, and you have to not run into shit.
Is there someone shouting encouragement at you?
Eventually gets a little more complex. What?
Is there someone shouting encouragement at you, or maybe offering tips
on a maneuver that you should pull off? Like music.
What? Like if you wanted to maybe spin like the plane in a circle?
You can't barrel roll.
Oh my god, why are we even talking about
this? Can you shoot? Okay. Are there bombs? Are there upgrades? Is your dad
there are in upgrades,
it?
And here's the hook. Are you ready?
Yeah.
They change the level every day, so there's a new leaderboard every day.
Okay, that's kind of fun.
That's nice, right?
This is not a mobile game you're talking about, right?
It's not. That's the problem, is I dig this game. I think it's pretty fun. It's good, like, game to play between other games. Or if you are,
lofty achievement.
If I worked on a PC, like, if I normally worked on my PC, I could, you know, be writing and then be like, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to take a break, play this game for about 5 minutes, and then go back to doing something else. Now, I do understand why games like this have found more success on the iPhone, because it's much easier to just, you know, pull out your iPhone and press an app and then play while I'm on a toilet or something.
Pooping.
You know? But it definitely looks better. It controls really well with, you know, a joystick. That's nice. So, yeah, I like it.
I just googled Race the Sun,
and an
IMDb page popped up that made me understand Russ's reference earlier.
Yeah.
And by the way, Russ, you can go straight to hell.
I love
Jim Belushi is in Race the Sun.
You bet he is.
Along with Halle Berry and Casey Affleck. He is credited as James Belushi.
It was this more serious phase.
Yeah, back when it was Life According to James.
It was after K-9.
I want to talk about my game, and it's not a relatively new game, but it was recently featured in PlayStation Plus. So I imagine its player base was expanded tenfold during that period. It was very recently pushed out of the rotation, so I apologize for not coming with it earlier, because it's one of the neater games I've probably ever played. And it is Zero Escape, Virtue's Last Reward. Is anybody down with that series, the Nine Doors, Nine Peoples, 9 Hours?
I mean, I've seen it, but it always scared me.
It's kind of a scary game. It's kind of scary. The two titles, and by the way, if you're going to play Virtue's Last Reward, which you absolutely should, it's on PlayStation Vita, you should make a concerted effort to pick up 999. I think they re-released it through Amazon. They did like an additional print of it last year, so it may not be too hard to do. Basically, it is... did you guys see Saw 2?
I saw Saw 1.
Basic gist of both games is... some shadowy figure or organization has brought 9 people together to play a game.
Okay. Sounds like Bad News Bears, but go on.
The rules are, like, very, very complex. Like, I'm not going to waste 5 minutes of listeners' time trying to get into it, but you have to solve these complex puzzle rooms, and you do them in teams of people. And in Virtue's Last Reward, after you solve the room, you get your team has to split up a set number of points. And the way you do that is through the ally betrayal game, which is sort of a... I think they do it in, like, Big Brother, right? Where, like, you have to vote whether to ally with the other person or betray them. And based
on how people betray, or
both people betray, then you get no points. If one person betrays the other allies, then one person loses, one person gains.
The end of Bachelor Pad.
Yes, it's the end of Bachelor Pad. Yes, thank you. and you do this for points, but if you go into the negatives, you die. And there are actually a lot of circumstances that lead you to die.
But it's a single player game, so you're fighting.
It is
AI.
A single player game, so you are playing against these characters, and the characters are all very well written, and their individual storylines have a lot of depth. So basically the game is an interactive novel with these puzzle segments peppered into it, and the entire time as you're playing you are making these literal life or death decisions in terms of who you want to pair up with, which puzzle rooms you want to go into, whether you want to ally with them or betray them, and based on the results of those decisions, you will go down different storylines. You will spend more time with certain characters and learn more about them. Or like you'll fucking die, or other characters will die.
Jesus.
Because they're, you know, there are very, very dangerous things afoot in this game.
Ooh.
The awesome thing about the game, and I really don't want to go too much into it because it's so fucking cool that, like, as it slowly dawned on me that it was happening, like, I gained a new appreciation for the game. You, at the sort of the flow for the game is depicted in this enormous flow chart that branches off showing exactly where each decision was. So it's basically like a tree, if you can imagine that. At the top of it, that's the start of the game. You haven't made a decision yet. And with each decision, it branches off, and it keeps going down and cascading like that. Mm-hmm. At any point, you can jump to a part of the tree you have been to before to make a different decision. So if you make it to the end of one storyline, which would probably take you a couple hours, and then you die, you can jump back to one of your earlier decisions and go a different way to see how it plays out and fill out another line of the tree. So you're basically filling up this flow chart of the story. What is fucking awesome is that at a certain point, the plot of the game begins to acknowledge the fact that you are playing through different timelines.
Oh, boy.
At a certain point, characters will say something like, oh, that's not how it happened. Or, like, somebody will give you a piece of information that you'll have to utilize in a different timeline.
I'm pretty sure Biff had a casino.
That's, like, yeah. It's no kidding, like, so fucking cool.
That's
and
neat.
Like it's different from 999 because 999 had a few different endings, but you had to play through the entire game to get to them. It didn't have this like flow chart system. In this game, you can literally go back and like just see how it's you know what it is? It's the movie Sliding Doors.
Oh boy.
But with it's Saw 2 meets Sliding Doors. I don't know what better recommendation I can give other than that. It really is like it's a fucking cool game, and even if it's not free anymore in PlayStation Plus, I would pick it up. I would try and do 999 first though, because there's a lot of super heady concepts at work. But it's just so neat. I love when like time travel and Quantum Leap-esque shit like that is well represented in games.
Yeah,
and it totally is here.
And sassy AI robots.
They're not robots.
Yeah,
they're
but not. Hal was.
That's Hal was a famous robot, so I guess you do have a.
Wasn't that the name of his helper on Quantum Leap? Hal.
Al.
Close enough.
God, I'm so angry right now.
Yeah, me too.
Al. Ziggy.
So, those are four games.
Cool.
Totally.
We did it, you guys.
We did it.
We did a whole episode.
So guys, do you want to talk about a bonus game?
Uh-oh. Yes.
Bonus game. Earthbound. It's great.
No, we're not doing that. No.
Yes,
we'll save it for next week because it's going to be a really good conversation.
It would be really weird to include it like in the normal podcast.
Let's save it for next week. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Who won this week?
I think I did.
Maybe.
You didn't win. I forgot what the game was.
James Belushi won.
Your game had Jim Belushi in it.
Everybody, I don't know. I think Dave won.
Everybody. I think Dave Tack did win.
Yes.
Yeah, Dave Tack won. Good work, Dave.
Good work.
Thanks, guys.
So this has been the Besties. You can read more of our work, or not our work, but the work of more talented people at polygon.com. It's a website about video games. Anything else I should talk about, guys? Mm. Oh, thanks to the person who edited the Nathan's Hot Dog Eating Contest Wikipedia page.
Oh, yeah.
To reflect the canonical victory held by New York Giraffe. That was clutch. Is that still on there?
I don't know. I haven't checked in a little while.
It was on there for a while. It made me a little worried about Wikipedia's vetting process, by which I mean you just click publish, and then there it is. Yeah, well, thanks
for...
Oh,
it's off. Sorry,
God audience. Damn it.
God thanks damn Joey Chestnut.
Thanks for listening. This has been The Besties, because shouldn't the world's best friends pick the world's best things?
Bestie!